Stop wasting time searching for deals on the guns and gear you want. Let Gundelio do the work for you. Download Gundelio for free, enable notifications, and start saving. You'll find hot deals, exclusive offers, and more. Trigger the deals. Gundelio.
Hey, this is Tom Gresham. We hope you enjoy this reloaded version.
And we are back. Tom Gresham here. It's 866 Talk Gun. Before we get to our guest, just got some breaking news coming out of Dallas. The NRA had a board of directors meeting today. They're in trouble, of course. They file for bankruptcy without getting the okay of the board of directors, which is violates the bylaws. So they knew they were in trouble. They got called on it in court. So they held a board meeting today, pulled the board members together so that they could get the board to vote to ratify the ex post facto, after the fact, filing for bankruptcy. The board did, in fact, vote to ratify that motion, but it was not unanimous. I don't know what the NRA is going to say when they come out of this and put out the word. I have seen it happen before where a vote that was not unanimous gets put out to the media that it was unanimous, so I don't know what they're going to say about that. But that was done, so they've got their CYA accomplished. Whether that gets them out of trouble with the bankruptcy court or with the New York State Attorney General's office or the IRS Criminal Investigative Division or any of the other folks who are circling slowly overhead like vultures, we'll find out. We should know. Actually, we should probably know something within the next 2 weeks. I'll keep you posted. Again, the number here is 866-TALK-GUN. One of our friends is a fellow who was firmly involved in the firearms industry, a gun company executive, and then moved to something connected but different and a passion of his heart. Mike Sedini joins us right now from Walk the Talk America. Mike, you might just explain what the organization is and what happened with your transition to doing that.
Tom, thanks for having me. I always enjoy talking with you and your family, so thanks for having me on.
You bet.
But what Walk the Talk America is, it's an organization that was founded by people from the firearms industry that had had enough with kind of the merry-go-round of madness and decided to come together and look for innovative ways to provide help to people who are in crisis without fear of consequence or restriction. So we work to bridge the gap with the mental health community just to look for creative ways to make Earth better, to get people the help they need before we have the stage four crisis. When I say stage four crisis, that could be anything from suicide by firearm or the tragic events that happened the last couple of weeks.
Right.
And I made the transition because I'm a suicide loss survivor. And the president of my former company, Eagle Imports, took his life with a firearm. So it's always been near and dear to my heart. Mm-hmm. And when I had this chance meeting, this person asked me, who was completely gun neutral, said, how does it work when there's a mass shooting? I said, everybody blames us. We blame mental health. And nothing ever gets done. She asked one question. If you know what the problem is, how do you work with the mental health community to come up with solutions? And at the time, I couldn't think of any. Yeah. So I started Walk the Talk America.
So you said, okay, let's find solutions. So one of the things that, in my experience, and I work with the National Shooting Sports Foundation, and we've reached out, we do work with suicide prevention groups, but some of the mental health groups don't want to work with people in the firearms industry. Have you run into that?
I haven't yet. I do see some of the groups that kind of shy away, but I know those going into those conversations, you kind of know where those groups stand.
Okay.
And we're not going to see common ground. But I will tell you this. I have seen a lot of people from these groups look at the solutions that we've come up with or things that we're willing to do, and they've been impressed by that. My biggest thing is that people have a perception of the gun community, and I'm here to smash that perception.
In what way? What are those perceptions?
I think a lot of people outside of the firearms community that are, I would say, lean to the anti-gun side or maybe gun neutral think that we don't do anything, that all we care about is profit. All we do is sell and celebrate when these tragedies happen, and that's just not the truth. And coming from somebody who grew up, I didn't grow up around guns, and I wasn't a gun guy per se growing up. When I was embraced by the firearms community, I saw the opposite. And that's the perception that I'm trying to smash is the one that that everybody else out there says, hey, they don't do anything.
Well, not only do they not do anything, the one that really galls me is when they say, you guys just don't care as long as you get to play with your toys.
Exactly.
You know, and that is just galling and insulting when, you know, we're out there trying to do things. But I will admit, we do a lot of things about gun responsibility, about gun training, about gun safety. But honestly, over the years, we probably have done very little, if anything, about suicide prevention.
Well, and I think there was this big fear of having it weaponized against us. And I do understand that and some of the narratives that were created. Mm-hmm. But it's time to kind of embrace that, because let me give you an example. Like, we lose more of our first responders, our combat vets and active duty military, than any other group. They gravitate towards the gun, you know, the gun side of the firearms industry. So it's something that we should address.
Hmm. Okay. So what have you come up with? What programs, what approaches do you have? You know, when you go talk to these groups, you say, this is what we can do. What do you tell them?
Well, what I like to do is obviously build trust. So the first thing I do when I do talk to groups is I listen to what their issues are. I validate the pain they may have, they feel during certain times, right, during these tragic events.
Right.
Because we feel that same pain as well.
Sure.
And then I explore options or show them the different options that we have. I learned that from Dr. Christian Conti in the book Walking Through Anger, and I've used that approach with everybody that I talk to. But we have valuable space in the firearms community. We have gun counters, gun shops, firearms trainers have packets, right? We have gun manufacturers' boxes. So, like, one example that we do is we have a free and anonymous mental health screening flyer that we get into all these different locations. We get them into gun shops. We get them into companies like Arms Corps and High Point. They put them in their box. Mm. It just leads to free and anonymous mental health screening. Okay. And why that's important is, A, it's free, and B, it's anonymous. So you can check in on yourself without having to worry about being put on any kind of list or anything like that. And yeah, and then we find ways to link people that are on our side, that are gun neutral or pro-gun, that could get people the help they need in crisis without that fear of consequence or walking for the rest of your life with a scarlet A on your chest.
Well, and also, a lot of folks on the gun side are thinking, yeah, but if I go try to find, you know, some help for this, I could end up being a prohibited person and not be able to even own a gun. So they don't go seek help.
And that's when it gets to stage four. And that's why it's important to get the proper information passed and have these type of programs. Like, one of the programs we have, Tom, is that we bring in mental health professionals to get continuing education credits to our cultural competence guns and mental health course. For yourself, it would be very boring class, right? But for many that are outside of the gun community, they come through this and it's an eye-opener. And plus, they have an incentive to take the course, and then they kind of understand where we're coming from in gun culture.
Well, and would it be fair to say that a lot of the folks who are not in the gun world, they don't even know what we are already doing in terms of gun safety, in terms of what it takes to buy a gun, and all the rest of it? They're kind of working from a vacuum.
Exactly. And this is why it's important to bridge that gap with not only just the mental health community, but everybody outside of it. Because what you want to do is educate them. You also want them to understand the process. We can't come up with solutions to maybe stop these tragedies, you know, to get upstream, to prevent the unpredictable, unless we work together and we talk things out. So the average person needs to understand what people in the firearms community go through when they purchase their weapons. The difference between, you know, it's all the same talking points, right? The difference between semi-automatic and automatic, why ARs are an issue, why registries are an issue. These are things that we can talk about. And when you link together and you kind of discuss these things and you build trust within a community, you can take that and, you know, you can get them to, when I say them, I hate saying that because it just sounds like we're just on two sides of the room, but
right.
We've gotten the mental health community on our side to shoot down certain laws, and that's something I'm very proud of, or come out against certain firearms laws because Yes, because they're educated. HR 127 is a perfect example of that. There's so much about HR 127 that's stigmatizing to mental health.
Oh, sure.
And that sure. Every single mental health organization, when they see what that bill, how that bill reads, they're going to come out of their chairs. It's whether or not they're going to see it. And that's what I love about Walk Talk America is we've developed the relationships with the mental health professionals where we can float that in front of them and say, this doesn't really jive with everything that you've told me about adding fuel to the fire of, you know, the stigma of mental health.
They're being told this is just a gun control bill, and they're going, well, I have no problem with that. And then they start digging into it and say, well, wait a minute, if you buy a gun now, you're going to have to submit to psychological or psychiatric tests, and so will the members of your family. And I'm sure they're reacting the same way we are, going, what?
Exactly, because everybody on the mental health side does usually understand. I guess, you know, I'm not saying everyone, but most of them understand that the only future predictor of violence is previous violence, not mental health diagnosis. That's important to remember.
How can people help you? How can they find out more about Walk the Talk America?
Well, obviously, money is a huge issue. I sold my company a couple years ago to do this full time, but we have no salaried employees. Everybody does it for the love of the game. And we do it just because we want to make Earth better. They can find us at WTTA.org or go to walkthetalkamerica.org or on social media at walkthetalkus. And if anybody has any questions, they can contact us through our site. We'd love to answer them. But we do need the support of the firearms industry. It is crucial that we get that.
Yeah, absolutely. And Michael, I just cannot thank you enough for what you're doing. The commitment you've made with your life is making a difference to people in their lives. It's well done. Well done.
Well, thank you for the support, sir. I truly appreciate everything you've done.
You bet. You take care. Michael Cedini, Walk the Talk America. It's walkthetalkamerica.org. If you know someone who might be in crisis, go take a look at this. There are resources there. We, the firearms community, needs to be a part of this solution. It's the right thing to do, and it's the smart thing to do, and it can actually be both of those at the same time. All right, open lines now, 866-TALK-GUN. Be right back.
Before computers, before engines and automobiles and roads, before all of this, there was the land. A great ocean of land with mountains black as night, standing guard over all that is and was and forever will be. This is the Black Hills of South Dakota, the place that made the people who make the best ammo on Earth.
Visit black-hills.com for more information.
Visit guntalk.com/win to enter Gun Talk's Build and Blast giveaway for multiple chances to win one of the following: an Aero Precision Builder Set, 1,000 rounds of 9mm ammunition from Remington, the Psionics Aurora Black Digital Night Vision Camera, or a prize pack with mounts, lights, sights, and more from Unity Tactical. Enter now through May 28th at guntalk.com/win.
As arms makers for responsible citizens, Ruger wants to ensure that new firearm owners have access to the helpful information they need to operate, store, and train with their new firearm safely and responsibly. The new Firearm Owner Resource page features a Fundamentals of Firearms Ownership video series, resources for local training and safe storage, instruction manuals, and suggestions for safety equipment and shooting supplies. Discover more at Ruger.com/new firearm owner.
Okay, I'm looking at this Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals decision where they bizarrely ruled last week that there is no right to bear arms. The keep and bear arms thing, no. You can keep them, but you can't carry them. Can't carry them openly. Can't carry them concealed. Can't carry them at all. And this thing is like 215 pages long. If you jump down to page 108, you start to read the dissent. Bear with me, because I just want to read a couple of paragraphs of the dissent, because you're going, oh, yeah, Yep, they got that. This is from the dissent. It says the majority holds that it does not, and that basically talking about can you have a gun outside of the home. The majority holds that it does not, and that a total ban on carrying a handgun outside the home does not implicate the Second Amendment right to bear arms whatsoever. The majority reaches this startling conclusion, not because it finds that the text of the Second Amendment supports it, that early American cases interpreted the amendment in this way, nor even that open public carry was regularly and uncritically subject to legislative prohibitions across our country's early history. Instead, the majority has declared that a state may constitutionally forbid all public carry of firearms based on the utterly inconsequential fact that the lawful manner of open public carry has historically been subject to modest regulation, but never to outright prohibition. Respectfully, the majority's opinion, in particular, its extreme and bizarre reliance on the mere fact that some historical regulation of firearms represents a gross misapplication of the textual and historic inequities that Heller demands. It goes on. It's like you're reading this thing and you're going, yeah, yeah. And then it goes on for another 100 pages with history of the Second Amendment. And we're talking about starting like about 1200, the year 1200 in England, and tracking the laws about guns and weapons. It's worth the read, and I'm sure you can find it out there. Obviously, if you follow me on Twitter, I link to that kind of thing all the time. Again, I am at Gun Talk on Twitter. Hey, let's go to line five. George is with us out of Fresno, California. What you been shooting, George?
Yeah, actually, California compliant KR9 from KUSA.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't hear use much of the AK platform style rifles on here. I just thought I wanted to throw that out there. It was super fun. It's extremely fun. Of course, it's in 9mm, not the typical 7.62-39, but
right.
Extremely fun, extremely accurate. Believe it or not, it was threw a little red dot on there and did some blinking. Super, super fun.
That would not be a bad home defense gun choice either.
Yeah, I actually do kind of have it for that. It has very low recoil. I mean, of course, 9mm, but it's extremely fun. It has a typical AK style. It's pretty much the same thing as an AK-47, but it's in a 9mm. Super fun, super.
Yeah. Right. Well, that's very cool. Well, I appreciate that. Good range report. Appreciate that, sir. And thank you for your call. When I mentioned using that as a home defense gun, there's something that just keeps coming back. You can't seem to get rid of it. It's like trying to swat all the mosquitoes in the world. It's just impossible. And this week, I'm working on it again on Twitter and Facebook, and people are saying, well, you don't want to use an AR-15 in a home because over-penetration goes through all those walls. And I just have to stop and say, no, actually, that's not factually correct. And of course, they go, well, it's a rifle. And well, I like to respond with, well, have you ever tested it? And then what you get, it's kind of like when you get the same thing from the gun banners. Well, but it's only common sense, which means, no, I haven't tested it, and I actually don't know. I'm just repeating something that somebody else on the internet said. Well, it's only common sense, except that I tested it. I built walls to shoot through. You can actually find them on our YouTube channel. Look for Gun Talk. Look for walls, penetration, or penetration through walls with various guns. We built three walls. Each of them has two sheets of plywood on 2x4s. Centers, and then the last one had insulation in it, and I think T111 for the exterior, and spaced them out. It's funny. We spaced them out, and somebody looked at the video and said, well, it would have been better if you'd had those walls as far apart as really the walls are in a house. And I'm thinking, okay, if the bullet had flown, because we had them about, 10 feet apart, the walls, because that's what we were allowed to do, basically, at the range where we were. If the walls had been another 10 feet apart, and the bullet had flown for 10 more feet through the air, what do you think would have happened? Crickets. So what did we discover when we shot through these walls? Because the whole idea is, you know, which guns will shoot through walls, which ones won't. Birdshot will blow right through the first wall and just pepper the second wall. Okay. I know people go, oh, birdshot, that's no good for self-defense. Well, maybe. It all depends. If I'm within 5 to 10 feet of somebody, I think it's pretty darn effective. It will blow big chunks off of people. It won't go through a bunch of walls. What will go through walls? Every handgun bullet we tried. 9mm, 40, 45, doesn't matter. 380 goes through several walls. 22s, no. But pretty much anything bigger than that, yeah. What won't go through walls? Interesting. Oh, slugs go through walls. Buckshot will go through all the walls and exit the house. Buckshot will. You know what won't? Bullets from an AR-15. Full metal jacket bullets from an AR-15 won't go through the second wall. Goes through the first wall, goes into the second wall, usually sideways, and stops. Might go through the second wall, it just depends, but then doesn't go sailing across the county, punching holes through the walls of all the trailer houses out there. How would you know that? Well, you could go to the internet and just copy what somebody else says about it. Oh, that makes sense. That's common sense. It's a rifle. 308s will certainly go through a lot of walls. But not 5.56 or 223. Huh. And then if you were, of course, to use varmint bullets in it, which would be very effective against threats, human threats, even less likely to go through walls. But you got to figure this out for yourself. And you know, you might want to actually ask somebody, have you actually tested that when people start repeating this kind of stuff? Have you personally tested that? Can you show me a video where somebody actually tested that? Or are you just repeating the old wives' tales that we hear so often out there? Critical thinking. Ask the hard questions. Be skeptical. I mean, if we're not skeptical, how would we ever learn anything? What's your take? 866-TALK-GUN.
Hey, this is Tom Gresham. We hope you enjoy this reloaded version.
It just goes on and on, I swear. It just never seems to end. And I've talked about that. I've been in this Second Amendment battle for more than 50 years professionally. And we just fight the same fights over and over again. It's kind of the ebb and the flow of the whole thing. And I guess the point I try to make to people is this is constant. This is forever. It's not a case of we win and now we can relax because they keep coming. And they keep coming in all these different weird directions. And the big change, frankly, over the last, five plus years, I don't know that people really understood it when it started happening, was when billionaire Michael Bloomberg decided to get involved in this. He changed the landscape. With his money, putting hundreds of millions of dollars into gun control efforts, created Every Town for Gun Safety, Moms to Ban, Action, and what you may not know is creating teams of lawyers. Of course, he hired a bunch of journalists who created this phony group. They call it a journalist group, the Trace. But he also hired a bunch of lawyers. And they have a law center now, and they go out and they're pushing these lawsuits. And then we get cases like this thing that just came out of the Ninth Circuit this past week, a truly bizarre decision saying that there is no right to bear arms. You can keep them, but you can't bear them. You can't carry them openly. You can't carry them closed. You can't carry them concealed. One of the great pieces I just read about this is from Emily Miller. She joins us right now, a noted journalist and the author of Emily Gets Her Gun. Hey, Emily, how are you?
Oh, it's so good to be back on your show.
Well, so glad to have you here. You know, you've been writing about guns and gun rights for a while. You kind of stuck your eye in the whole Washington, D.C. establishment thing and forced them, you know, to basically allow you to get your carry permit there or your gun.
Ownership.
Okay, so when you look at this Ninth Circuit decision, you're writing about that. First of all, what's your overall take on this whole thing?
The Ninth Circuit, well, you know better than I do, but the Ninth Circuit is so far out of the mainstream, and they are always been against, I think they try to eliminate guns if they could completely, right? Like, mm-hmm. They're so off the deep end. And in the Peruta case, which we saw about, I think, 5-6 years ago, they ruled that there is no right to have concealed carry. So this case, Young versus Hawaii, I thought was so bizarre because Mr. Young, he's a Vietnam vet in Hawaii, wants to open carry. Now, we all know that the public doesn't really understand this, but those of us who understand how firearms mostly work is that open carry is not a source of crime because, frankly, you see the guy coming with his rifle. It's not like Mr. Young is he's not a threat, right?
Right.
This is not a crime issue. This is not a public safety issue. This is just a virtue signaling issue, really.
It's control.
And Mr. Young, it's a Second Amendment issue because of course he has the right to carry his gun openly. The Constitution is clear, and the Supreme Court, when it ruled in Heller decision, Big Heller's a friend of both of ours, great Heller decision, said you have the right to keep arms, everyone's individual right to own arms. They did not go decide on what kind of limits could exist on bearing arms, but we can rest assured they're not going to ever rule that there are no possibility of bearing arms ever. I mean, that's just not going to happen.
Okay.
So we've had so many splits, and right, those of us who follow Second Amendment rights have been following this for years because all the circuit courts have been split on what limits can exist on the right to bear arms, on carry rights. So some of the positive places we've seen is the Seventh Circuit has been positive and said there is a right to carry your gun outside the home because generally people don't come inside your home to hurt you. And then the D.C. Circuit, which was a surprise to all of us who are in the D.C. Circuit, came out in the Wren case, which was, I think, 5 years ago now, and said that Brian Wren was saying, I want a right to carry. And D.C. had a complete ban on all carry rights. And then slowly, because they're under pressure from the court, made it shall issue. That's how I got my permit and said, you're a threat. And you have threats and you're endangering proven need. I didn't really get much pleasure out of that. The fact that I could say that I have death threats against me is why.
Right. Hate to qualify on that basis, but there you go.
Yeah, it didn't feel like a great victory for Second Amendment rights. I'm like, yeah, I have multiple threats against my life. So, but then Wren case came out in D.C., and you know the history here. D.C. made the major mistake in the country of appealing the Heller decision, and that's how the Supreme Court came out and said there's an individual right to own a gun.
So they learned from that.
And then they came... Right, exactly. And so the Attorney General in D.C., when this Wren case came out in the D.C. Circuit, and the D.C. Circuit said you have the right to bear arms outside the home, the D.C. Attorney General said we're not appealing it.
And well, they didn't want the Supreme Court to verify that.
Right.
They didn't want the precedent.
Exactly. And that's what's been happening around the country is a lot of attorney generals are not appealing because they don't want it to get to the Supreme Court. On the flip side of this is we've all been watching Supreme Court repeatedly not take up carry rights. So going back to the Ninth Circuit, the Peruta case, which is San Diego, said you can't carry a gun outside the home. It got appealed. And the Ninth Circuit, again, said you can't, even though our now Vice President Kamala Harris got involved. And it got to the Supreme Court, and they did not take it, which was, for all of us who really want the court to take up a carry case and rule on this, was a disappointment. And Justice Thomas and Gorsuch said they really think they dissented and said the court needs to take it up.
But to be fair, we think we know what was going on. It's probably the folks at the Supreme Court were looking at it and going,
yes,
we can't trust Roberts. We don't think we can win with this one. So they put it on the back burner. And, of course, now we have a very different Supreme Court than then.
Exactly. I mean, it was really, since Gorsuch has been on the court, it's been, you know, Roberts, you have no idea what he's going to come down on. He usually comes down on whatever's the most popular for his own legacy, frankly.
That's it.
But I don't know if it had been out of the question that he would vote with the majority on a bear case, right? But he's unpredictable, and I think probably the justices think he's unpredictable. So they're not the good guys, our guys, our Second Amendment guys, Thomas, Alito, Gorsuch, they aren't going to take a chance with him. But now we have Amy Coney Barrett.
Yes.
And we don't, obviously, with all Supreme Court justices, you never know what's going to happen. but it's looking pretty likely that she would be a good vote on this. And so that's what's interesting about this Young versus Hawaii case coming up. Because why did the Ninth Circuit take up a case that would be so easy for the Supreme Court to say this is not constitutional? I mean, that the opinion literally says you do not have, the Second Amendment does not protect the right to carry guns. Flat out.
Right.
I mean, it's an absolute contradiction to the Constitution.
As the dissent says, that's a bizarre approach to the whole thing. You know, there's keep and bear is part of the deal. So do you think they did this as a way of trying to get it up to Supreme Court?
I think they want an answer. I think a lot of the courts want an answer. We've had the job of the Supreme Court is to resolve splits in the appeals courts.
Right.
So we're basically resolve splits among the country when you have liberal and conservative areas of the country. It's their job to figure that out. And it's been a long time. And the splits are about a constitutional, the Second Amendment. And it's been a long time coming. We've had, Heller was 20, what was it, 20? I should know this off the top of my head.
It's 2008.
Listening, he's going to be calling me in a second. 2008, right?
Yeah.
So it's going to be 13 years ago, and we still haven't resolved this other half of the Second Amendment. And so I think, as I said in my column, I think that the Ninth Circuit is trolling the Supreme Court because they're putting up a case that is so ridiculous. Because of course you have the right to carry, of course the founders intended for people to carry guns outside the home. And of course that was open carry because we didn't have holsters back then.
So
obvious. I mean, I think it would even be hard for the liberal justices to weigh against this case. Mm-hmm. My guess would be that I think the Ninth Circuit has set this up because they're just saying to the Supreme Court, come on already.
Give us something. Take a case.
When it comes to it, I think exactly. Give us something. You got to do this. I mean, of course, the Ninth wants them to come down and say there are limits are allowed, and that could happen. Mm-hmm. What's going to be interesting is I think my guess would be now that we have the right amount of justices, I think they'll probably combine cases. So
yes.
Maybe
they take
this Young case because they turned down so many cases. There aren't a lot at the appeals court level anymore. So they're going to have to take. They're going to need a real concealed carry case at the appeals court level, and they're going to need. And they'll take this. Could take this open case because the Ninth Circuit is so important.
All right, Emily, I'm going to have to boogie, but tell people how they can follow what you're doing online and anywhere else that you're writing.
Yes, great. I am, Twitter Emily Miller, Facebook Emily Miller DC, and now I'm writing a new column on Substack, which is a place where conservatives can feel safe. So it's emilymiller.substack.com.
Substack is Substack. Emily, thank you so much. We're going to get you back on here more often, okay?
Thanks, Tom. Great to talk to you.
All right, you take care. 866-TALK-GUN. Be right back.
Have you just purchased your first firearm? Millions of Americans have made personal protection a priority, and Smith & Wesson has created a resource to welcome first-time gun owners into the firearms community. It's called Smith & Wesson Gun Smarts. Hosted on Smith & Wesson's YouTube channel, the Gun Smarts video series covers a variety of training topics. Become a confident, responsible gun owner. Visit Smith & Wesson on YouTube and see what Gun Smarts has for you.
Hunters carry on traditions, passing on a legacy for preserving wildlife to the next generation. They are committed to conservation and caring for our natural resources. Hunters are wildlife conservation's best-kept secret and hold the keys to preserving our natural world. At Ducks Unlimited, we understand how a hunter's time and generosity are key to the survival of waterfowl and other wildlife. Please visit ducks.org to learn more on how you can help.
Your gun rights are under attack as never before. Joe Biden's administration has promised to rip away your constitutional rights, making good on the promises they made to the gun ban lobby. It's time to get off the sidelines and get in the fight. The Second Amendment Foundation's actions in dozens of landmark lawsuits have pushed back these gun grabs, but we need your help. Join and support the Second Amendment Foundation. Go to saf.org. That's saf.org.
Visit Brownells.com for the best parts, tools, and accessories to get your build on. Building an AR? Brownells has the best uppers, lowers, barrels, handguards, and parts. What about a custom pistol build? Brownells has both 80% and complete handgun frames, slides, and barrels to make your handgun what you want. Brownells also has articles and videos to help you build and customize your firearms. Go to Brownells.com and start your gun build today.
Okay, you can get some Post-it notes, get some notes, put them on your refrigerator, put them everywhere you go. Tom was right. Next time I will listen to him. When ammo prices go down, whatever that is, I will commit to buying ammo on a regular basis. Right? You will be doing this. Right? I actually followed my own advice this time, which often I don't. And over the past 8 years, I've been saying, ammo's cheap, buy it now. Ammo's cheap, buy it now. Something's going to happen. I don't know what. Something's going to happen. It's going to go back up in price. It's going to be scarce. It's going to be hard to find. Buy it now. Buy some every week. Buy some every month. One box at a time. Whatever you can do. Some did. I was just out looking, checking. I'm okay. I got enough practice ammo to get through this thing, whatever this thing is. I'm now reevaluating my guesstimate of how long it's going to last. I'm thinking maybe another 12 months. Who knows? I do have good information that there are three separate new primer factories being built. That's astounding. I was surprised there was one. And then to find out there are three. You know, being built by ammo companies, sure, they need primers for their production, but also that will allow them to make more. There are ammo companies that have to shut down right now sometimes because they don't have primers. They could make ammo, but they don't have primers. And they're saying, well, we're not going to let that happen again. We'll make our own primers. It's an involved process. Making primers is a whole different deal. It's the only explosive in the whole recipe for ammunition. So there you go. I'm glad to hear that. It'll be 3 months maybe before the first one comes online. As I find out more about it and we can talk about it, I'll give you more information. Let's go talk to Steve on 4. He's out of Omaha, Nebraska. What's your range report on here, Steve?
Yes, Tom. It's a 35 Remington that we were emailing back and forth about.
Oh, which model?
Mine's a model 14. Action.
Yes, that's the got the spiral thing in the magazine tube?
Yes, that's it. It is just a beautiful piece of work. I mean, it's just an artful. Back when they made guns, you know, fancy or nice or whatever.
Yeah,
it was
well,
a piece
there's
of
just
art.
A lot of handwork in that. This is a Savage.
No, it's a Remington.
It's a Remington. Okay.
14.
Okay, and 35 Remington. And of course, 35 Remington is a great
35
cartridge.
Remington. Yeah, I couldn't find any modern firearms, so I went with the Jim Kennedy way of thinking. I went and went after a gun that they don't make anymore.
I like that. And then you find one, and of course, now you got to find ammo for it, but now that's kind of part of the fun of the whole thing.
I finally found it at the gun show. It was about $250 a round, which is better than $650 that I saw online.
Ooh, yeah, that sounds good. Look, I apologize, but I've got to hit the break here. We're doing it again. That is terrific. A Remington Model 14 pump. You can look that up online, see what that looks like. Very well made. 35 Remington. 35 Remington, I don't think is appreciated as much as it should be. That's a great deer cartridge. You ever shot one? All right, back with you, 866 Talk Gun. Jim called in from Abilene, Texas on 4. Hey, Jim, what you looking at here for ammo?
Hey, Tom. I just had a question, and it's been a couple of years ago, back when you could buy ammo. I ordered a box of the 147-grain Plus P hard cast lead 9mm from Double Tap.
Okay.
And they were out of stock, but they said, we do have the flat nose full metal jacket 147 grain plus P. And so I said, well, go ahead and send me that.
Okay.
And they did. And then about 3 or 4 weeks later, I got another package from them that was a box of the hard cast.
Okay.
But I have a question, and I, of course, I'm in Texas, and I bought this specifically. We're going to go to Colorado on vacation. I wanted something, you know, that with maybe a little bit of the bear protection and all that. But of course, we also have the feral hogs down here.
Right, and this is nine millimeter, right?
It is 9 millimeter, okay. 147 grain.
Right.
But my question is, what is the practical difference between the hard cast and the full metal jacket as far as on hogs or, you know, say on black bear?
Two things could be a difference. One is the diameter of the meat plat, that is the big flat area. The wider it is, the more damage it's going to do, since it's neither of those is expanding. So you might just look at that. Both of them are going to penetrate right. quite well. The one that has the wider meat plat is going to do a little bit more damage.
I think they're pretty much, and I'm on the way to work, so I don't have them in my hands right now. But I think, I mean, they're both flat points. And
I would say, and the other thing is, you know, have you shot any of them in your gun? Because the main thing is, will they feed? Because some guns may have a little trouble with cast bullets and probably would feed the FMJs better.
Yeah, I've got an M&P 9, you know, and also, have a gun that I wish they still made, the little Taurus 709 Slim.
Oh, yeah.
I love that thing. And I don't know why Taurus discontinued it, but, whatever.
Let me ask you a quick question. I'm going to run out of time. How much ammo do you have of each right now?
Right now, I've just got a partial box of both the full metal jacket and the hard cast.
Here's what I would do. I would take them out and shoot two rounds of the hard cast and two rounds of the FMJ at about 15 yards. Very careful shooting and see where they hit, okay? And if they're both shoot to about the same point of aim, then just load up a mag with one of them and load up your backup mag with maybe another one. And now you got, you know, if they shoot to the same point, if they are even close, I mean, at 15 yards, if they're within 2 or 3 inches of each other, they're probably just fine. The reality is you've got good ammo there. Both of them are good. Both of them will work. Both of them are absolutely marginal on bears. I mean, you understand that going in. It's not great. On hogs, maybe a little bit better, but even there, I'd be careful. But at least you're thinking. And I would say just make sure they feed, see what their point of impact is, if they are pretty much the same, and go from there. I don't think you have much to worry about. It's like saying, I want to get a Lexus, or I want to get a Mercedes, or a Lincoln or whatever. They're all good. And what you have there is good. So I guess I just would say don't stress about it a whole lot. Hey, if you'd like to follow up on any of this, if you want to chat with us about something else, we're going to enter the after show portion right now. You can call us at 866-TALK-GUN. In the meantime, don't forget to check out the podcast. Anywhere you get podcasts, you can find Gun Talk. And, of course, check us out on Facebook. We have a lot of things going on there. We're posting videos there all week long. In the meantime, check your six, carry everywhere you go. Protect your family and yourself. We'll see you later.